Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this, what's left of this Friday morning. Once again, text line 251-343-0106. Text me. Let me know what's on your mind. And time permitting, we'll get to your text. I'll do my best. But joining us now, he's our returning champion. We do this every week about this time. State Senator Chris Elliott is on the program. Senator, how are you?
I am doing great. It is great to be back in South Alabama and watch the sun come up over the bay this morning instead of in downtown Montgomery. So glad to be back.
You have acquired the State House super immunity somehow. And maybe it's because you're upstairs, but like I spend any prolonged amount of time in that building and it sniffles, you know, and I'm amazed how you guys. I'm particularly amazed how people who work in that year-round are able to stave off whatever demons haunt that building.
It's not a pleasant place to be, is it?
No, it's just I mean, some of it's kind of cool, and I got to spend some time up on the eighth floor, and they got some cool photos and things to look at. But generally speaking, man, it's a drab building. It's, it reminds me like one of these abandoned malls or something.
That's about it, but not for much longer. This will be the last session that we have in that old building, and then we'll get something that's much better suited, not only for legislators to do their work, but more importantly for the public to be able to interact with the legislators than what we've got now, which is just wholly inadequate.
Yeah, and I may have told you this, we may have talked about this on the program, but Pro Tem Gudger, you know, he makes a living off of architectural antiques and salvaging parts of old buildings. And he says there's nothing redeemable in that building worth saving. Tells you all you need to know.
Yeah, pretty much. If it was worth saving, we'd save it. And I tend to agree with him. I think we may still use all the Senate desks and furniture that are on the floor. I think those are going over. But other than that, I think there's not much else.
There's no like columns or there's nothing stately about it. It's just here's the way I would describe it, like a Soviet building, 80s era Soviet building.
That's exactly right. I don't think anybody will be sad to see it go.
Well, let's kick it off here. We're well past the third of the way mark, and the first third always is speedy, right? Because you got to burn through days to get to where you need to be, where you need to have, you know, all the formalities and all of the requirements to have the bills heard, the bills read, committee, public comment, etc. So it's been a quick first third, but now we're going to start doing 2-day weeks, and now it's going to kind of lag a little bit.
It is. It'll slow down a good bit. I expect a 2-day week. And I just, for your listeners, every time I say 2-day week, people go, "You're only working 2 days a week. What's wrong with you?" You know, and it's not that. It's 2 days on the floor actually passing legislation. There's a full day of committee work in between that. And then there are days on either end where we're back in the district working, you know, to make sure we're getting legislation ready to go and talking with constituents. So it's a busy time. But yes, 2 days on the floor next week, probably 3 days following that to you know, get things moving again, but and pick the pace up again. But you're right. Lots moving in the first third so far, and bills already to the governor's desks, including some that I've, you know, certainly flagged as priorities for me and to get across the line. And so I'm pleased with that. The process is working very well. The pro tem, Senator Gudger, in his second year in that spot, is really hitting his stride, and with a new chief of staff that is just making the Senate hum. And that's great compared to what we saw, you know, previously. And so, you know, some lessons learned there and going in the right direction. So things are going well. I'm very pleased.
Yeah, and so we're moving right along, and I guess the question would be regarding the progress. Fourth year of a quadrennium, your second one. I mean, does it seem like it's moving like it should be, with the idea that you're early here this year, as you are with the fourth year, and the idea is to get this wrapped up as soon as possible?
Well, it's always, get it wrapped up as soon as possible. We've got 30 days to meet, as you pointed out earlier, and that's, again, 30 days on the floor inside of 105 days. So we'll do that in a three-and-a-half-month period and methodically work through things. The budgets are very important this year. We're starting to see revenues starting to flatten out. That's a good thing. You see state agencies continue to push for additional funding. We'll have to push back against that this year. And so keeping the budgets in line is an important thing. You also will see good fiscal conservative measures to try to continue to make Alabama a very predictable, stable, business-friendly environment so that businesses continue to come to Alabama and invest in Alabama. And that's what we need to be focused on. I spoke this morning to the Baldwin County Economic Development Alliance, the big group that they had, and really underscore the importance of stability and fiscal conservatism to increase and encourage increased investment in the state, which grows our economy, grows our tax base, makes it a better place to live, work, and play, and doing that in a responsible manner. And so those are the big pictures. There's a lot of noise about all these other little pieces of legislation, but it's the big pieces that really matter and really set the table for what the state and what our county looks like for years to come.
Let's start here. The bills, you mentioned some meaningful bills getting to the governor's desk. Where do we need to start?
Well, Tuesday, we passed in the Senate and the House concurred with the dredging bill that deals with, Mobile Bay and the port and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and dredging. It is with the governor and for her signature right now, which I expect to occur either today or very early next week, and that will be law. That was a big piece of legislation and a tough piece of legislation to get through, but one that I'm really pleased with, and I think it does a good job balancing the economic interests of the port, but certainly the importance of Mobile Bay, not just from an ecological standpoint, which is important to me, but also from an economic standpoint, right? People come to live, work, and play here, the 8.5 million visitors we have every year, because of our water quality, because of our beaches, because of our fishing, because of the environment. And we need to protect that economic, engine as well as the environmental engine. And I was glad that my colleagues were able to see that over some objections from some, big business interests, at least initially, and then pass the bill and get final passage of it, get to the governor's desk. So that's a huge win.
Yeah, and so you got that. Talk about the, the one that seems to be generating a lot of buzz, the child sex predator. Your colleague Matt Simpson taking it to the House, April Weaver upstairs in your chamber, but that one seemed to sell through with relatively minor objections.
It did, and I think the horrific events surrounding what happened in Bibb County and those that story really kind of spurred everybody into saying, okay, we've got to do something about this. This is just absolutely out of control, and we need to make sure, as Senator Weaver said, that there's a special place in hell for people like this. And I think she said the other day, listen, it's not up to me to make the decision, but maybe to expedite the decision-making process for them. So I think it's a good piece of legislation that needed to pass. Of course, Representative Simpson had it last year and wasn't able to get it through, but I think with Senator Weaver's help this year, was able to get it across the line and get it again to the governor for her signature. And I hope that sends a message to those that may prey on children. Look, we're not messing around. If you're preying on children, we're going to come after you. And if you're convicted, it's a capital offense, as well it should be.
The other topic, and Senator Chambliss and I talked about it at length on Wednesday, the budgets are starting where you're seeing probably at least a rollback in the general fund. These interest payments on the federal money, statutorily, you have to have it, I guess, spent by the end of the year. But that seems to be the case. Now is where there's going to be a flattening, if you will, if not ultimately maybe even a decrease. But the budgets are going to start to – we're going to start to see the growth kind of flatten out.
Well, you're right. And I met with Senator Albritton this morning and talking about that. And the general fund is particularly going to be hard hit by changes in interest payments. just about the budget and the constraints on the budget and where and how to cut and what we need to do to, you know, to be good fiscal conservatives. And yes, there's an artificial, if you will, almost impact on the general fund budget due to the interest payments. So smartly, Alabama has taken the federal largesse, right, from CARES Act and ARPA funding and things of that nature. And what do? We put it in an interest-bearing, you know, checking account, right, like anybody would do when you're sitting on all of this money. And that has yielded huge, and by huge, I mean hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars worth of interest payments to the state general fund budget over the years. The problem is that money is, as Senator Chambliss pointed out, is required to be spent by the end of the year. And that means the principal there will be gone. And so we will lose hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars worth of interest payments that has really been, you know, subsidizing the general fund budget, not through any fault of our own. It just was always going to happen. And so we've been preparing for that over the years, but that is now occurring, and it will require tougher action by the budget committees on which I serve to make sure that we do what we tell everybody we're doing when we're running for election, which is we're going to go be fiscal conservatives. And so that's ahead of us, and it will be tough, but I'm confident we'll do what we need to do to keep things stable.
The Senator Gavan on Dale Jackson's show yesterday talked about it, and I want to just kind of get your thoughts. But there's another gambling bill that's been filed. Senator Coleman from the Birmingham area, what she's calling a clean lottery, but that seems to be kind of playing fast and loose with some of the terms here. But is it that just seems like a messaging bill, and if the real gambling discussions probably won't take place this year.
I think you're right in saying that. I mean, look, we've had these gambling discussions for years. We will continue to have those discussions. I'm confident of that. Eventually, I think that there will be enough votes for a gaming package to move through. But it will not be, you know, before the end of this session, nor with all of the other issues that we have on our plate, is leadership in either the House or Senate in a mood to suck all of the oxygen out of the room with that particular issue. And so, my colleague from Jefferson County has introduced a piece of legislation, but I don't expect it to move at all. And that's just the nature of things. I think we will get to it eventually, and we will get to it when there are the votes to actually pass it, but I doubt that will be this year.
Well, that's a big part of this, the votes. And, you know, I'm sure you're watching it, but there's, not going to get to it this year, but there's a chance the votes won't be in the Senate just based on the Republican primary, who gets elected. You pretty much have an idea of who's yes and who's no. And that, to me, it's contingent on really what's going to happen in this election cycle.
I think you're right about that. And so for those that are proponents of gaming and those that are opponents of gaming, you know, when you have a one vote or a two vote margin in the Senate, the outcomes of these elections certainly matter. And so we'll have to see if any of that changes. You also can see candidates too, Jeff, that are running against incumbents who have even harder positions one way or the other already. And so what you may think may, you know, make us more interested in dealing with the gambling issue in the Senate may actually turn out very differently than that. And it may get even harder depending on the outcome of elections. And so that could happen as well.
Yeah, because I don't know where you are. And you were a no on it when it came up a couple of years ago. But could you ever, do you see yourself getting to yes under the right circumstances?
Sure, and I've been there before, right? And listen, I don't toy around with that, and I voted for it and I voted against it, but it's not the same it, and that's the important thing to note, right? I certainly had my reasons for voting no most recently, and that was because it was a huge expansion of government. It had Medicaid expansion in it. It would have broken the general fund this year. Absolutely would have broken the general fund this year if we'd done that. And so, you know, there are reasons behind that, and you've got to look at what the final proposal is. But yeah, there's absolutely a way I can get to yes, and I've been there before. We just have got to keep the special interests out of it, and we've got to make sure that we're fiscally responsible first, and do not harm our existing budgets by having extreme expansions of government included in a gambling bill.
Well, let's, you know, the gambling discussion goes on and on and on, but you know, we have a the state has like roughly, when you put the ETF and general fund together, $12 billion. This is such a drop in the bucket with revenue. They think, what, $300 million relative to that overall picture. And, I mean, even if you just segregate out the ETF and, you know, $9 billion. And to me, I think it's a little oversold on the amount of money that would be generated from gambling.
Well, that to me is probably the most frustrating part of this argument is when people, you know, that are proponents of a comprehensive gaming bill say, oh, this is going to fix all of the state's problem. Whatever your problem is, whether it's education or roads and bridges or, you know, or scholarships for college students, whatever, this is the fix. And it's not. It's not enough money to fix any of that alone, and certainly not when you start dividing it all up. And so is it revenue? Yes, it's revenue. Does it come with a societal expense? Yes, that's worth noting as well. But at the end of the day, the one constant is this is not a panacea for all that ails us. And to say that it is disingenuous.
Yeah, I just it always kind of floors me. And yeah, we would just have the four-lane I-65 Mobile Bay Bridge. We'd have all this with our schools. We're last in whatever metric, and this is going to fix it. That's just not the case. And there's never been a circumstance where another state has done this, and it really has corrected these deficiencies.
Well, exactly. And again, especially when you start dividing it up a little bit for education scholarships, a little bit for roads and bridges, a little bit for district attorneys or whatever the cause du jour is, right? When you start dividing it up like that, it gets so watered down that it's almost negligible, right, from a revenue standpoint.
Senator, we'll leave it there, but thanks for hopping on again, and we'll talk in a couple of weeks.
Man, enjoy this beautiful weekend, and thanks for having me on.
Thank you. State Senator Chris Elliott there. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.